Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a feature article by Straka et al., a national survey of pediatric post-acute care facilities. Objectives: to identify and geolocate pediatric post-acute care facilities in the United States. Design: cross-sectional survey using both online resources and telephone inquiry. Setting: all 50 U.S. states surveyed from June 2022 to May 2023. Care sites identified via state regulatory agencies and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Measurements included number, size, and type of facility, scope of practice, and type of care provided. 1,355 facilities were surveyed. Of these, 252, or 18.6%, were pediatric-specific units or adult facilities accepting some pediatric patients. There were 109 pediatric-specific facilities identified within 39 U.S. states. Of these, 38 were freestanding with all accepting children with tracheostomies, 97.4%, or 37 of 38 accepting those requiring mechanical ventilation via tracheostomy, and 81.6%, or 31 of 38 accepting those requiring parenteral nutrition. The remaining 71 facilities were adult facilities with embedded pediatric units or children's hospitals, with 88.7%, or 63 of 71 accepting tracheostomies, 54.9%, or 39 of 71 accepting mechanical ventilation via tracheostomy, and 54.9%, or 39 of 71 accepting parenteral nutrition. 11 states lacked any pediatric-specific post-acute care units or facilities. In conclusion, the distribution of pediatric post-acute care is sparse and uneven across the United States. We present an interactive map and database describing these facilities. These data offer a starting point for exploring the consequences of pediatric post-acute care supply. Abstract 2 is a feature article by Thurnbeck et al., Interfacility Referral Communication for PICU Transfer. Objectives: for patients requiring transfer to a higher level of care, excellent interfacility communication is essential. Our objective was to characterize verbal handoffs for urgent interfacility transfers of children to the PICU and compare these characteristics with known elements of high-quality intra-hospital shift-to-shift handoffs. Design: mixed methods retrospective study of audio-recorded referral calls between referring clinicians and receiving PICU physicians for urgent interfacility PICU transfers. Setting: an academic tertiary referral PICU. Patients included children 0 to 18 years old admitted to a single PICU following interfacility transfer over a 4-month period from October 2019 to January 2020. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We reviewed interfacility referral phone calls for 49 patients. Referral calls between clinicians lasted a median of 9.7 minutes with an interquartile range of 6.8 to 14.5 minutes. 96% of referring clinicians provided information on history, 94% on physical examination, 94% on test results, and 98% on interventions. 87% of clinicians provided assessments of illness severity, and 19% provided assessments of code status. 77% of referring clinicians and 6% of receiving PICU physicians stated the working diagnosis. Only 9% of PICU physicians summarized information received. Interfacility handoffs usually involved 1. Indirect references to illness severity and diagnosis rather than explicit discussions, 2. Justifications for PICU admission, 3. Statements communicating and addressing uncertainty, and 4. Statements indicating the referring hospital's reliance on PICU resources. Interfacility referral communication was similar to intra-hospital shift-to-shift handoffs with some key differences. 1. Use of contextual information for appropriate PICU triage, 2. Difference in expertise between communicating clinicians, and 3. Reliance of referring clinicians and PICU physicians on each other for accurate information and medical transport guidance. In conclusion, interfacility PICU referral communication shared characteristics with intra-hospital shift-to-shift handoffs. However, communication did not adhere to known elements of high-quality handovers. Structured tools specific to PICU interfacility referral communication must be developed and investigated for effectiveness in improving communication and patient outcomes. Abstract 3 is a feature article by Atreya et al., biomarker assessment of a high-risk data-driven pediatric sepsis phenotype characterized by persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock. Objectives: identification of children with sepsis-associated multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, or MODS, at risk for poor outcomes remains a challenge. We sought to determine reproducibility of the data-driven persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype and determine its association with inflammatory and endothelial biomarkers, as well as biomarker-based pediatric risk strata. Design: we retrained and validated a random forest classifier using organ dysfunction subscores in the 2012 to 2018 electronic health record dataset used to derive the persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype. We use this classifier to assign phenotype membership in a test set consisting of prospectively enrolled pediatric septic shock patients from 2003 to 2023. We compared profiles of the PERSEVERE family of biomarkers among those with and without the persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype and determined the association with established biomarker-based mortality and MODS risk strata. Setting: 25 PICUs across the United States. Patients: electronic health record data from 15,246 critically ill patients with sepsis-associated MODS split into derivation and validation sets, and 1,270 pediatric septic shock patients in the test set, of whom 615 had complete biomarker data. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The area under the receiver operator characteristic curve of the modified classifier to predict persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype membership was 0.91, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.9 to 0.92 in the electronic health record validation set. In the test set, persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype membership was associated with both increased adjusted odds of complicated course and 28-day mortality after controlling for age, severity of illness, and immunocompromised status. The adjusted odds ratio for complicated course was 4.1 with a 95% confidence interval of 3.2 to 5.4, and the adjusted odds ratio for 28-day mortality was 4.8 with a 95% confidence interval of 3.11 to 7.25. Patients belonging to the persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock phenotype were characterized by greater degree of systemic inflammation and endothelial activation and were more likely to be stratified as high risk based on PERSEVERE biomarkers predictive of death and persistent MODS. In conclusion, the persistent hypoxemia, encephalopathy, and shock trajectory-based phenotype is reproducible, independently associated with poor clinical outcomes, and overlapped with higher risk strata based on prospectively validated biomarker approaches. Abstract 4 is a feature article by Ames et al. Healthcare Burden and Resource Utilization After Pediatric Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome, a secondary analysis of the Collaborative Pediatric Critical Care Research Network Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome Study. Objectives: to describe family healthcare burden and health resource utilization in pediatric survivors of acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS, at 3 and 9 months. Design: secondary analysis of a prospective multi-site cohort study. Setting: 8 academic PICUs in the United States from 2019 to 2020. Patients included critically ill children with ARDS and follow-up survey data collected at 3 and/or 9 months after the event. There were no interventions. Methods and measurements. We evaluated family healthcare burden, a measure of healthcare provided by families at home, and child health resource use, including medication use and emergency department and hospital readmissions during the initial 3 and 9 months post-ARDS using proxy report. Using multivariable logistic regression, we evaluated patient characteristics associated with family healthcare burden at 3 months. Main results. Of 109 eligible patients post-ARDS, 74 patients, or 68%, followed up at 3 months, and 63 patients, or 58%, followed up at 9 months. At 3 months, 46 families, or 62%, reported healthcare burden, including 22% with unmet care coordination needs. At 9 months, 33 families, or 52%, reported healthcare burden, including 10 families, or 16%, with unmet care coordination needs. At month 3, 61 patients, or 82%, required prescription medications, 13 patients, or 18%, had emergency department visits, and 16 patients, or 22%, required hospital readmission. At month 9, 41 patients or 65% required prescription medications, 19 patients or 30% had emergency department visits, and 16 patients or 25% required hospital readmission. Medication use was associated with family healthcare burden at both 3 and 9 months. In a multivariable analysis, pre-illness functional status and chronic conditions were associated with healthcare burden at month 3, but illness characteristics were not. In conclusion, pediatric ARDS survivors report high rates of healthcare burden and health resource utilization at both 3 and 9 months post-ARDS. Future studies should assess the impact of improved care coordination to simplify care, for example, medication management, and improve family burden. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation by Logan et al. Association of an in-hospital desirability of outcomes ranking scale with post-discharge health-related quality of life, a secondary analysis of the life after pediatric sepsis evaluation. Objectives: to develop a desirability of outcome ranking scale for use in children with septic shock and determine its correlation with a decrease in 3-month post-admission health-related quality of life or death. Design: secondary analysis of the life after pediatric sepsis evaluation prospective study. Setting: 12 U.S. PICUs from 2013 to 2017. Patients included children 1 month to 18 years old with septic shock. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We applied a 7-point pediatric critical care desirability of outcome ranking scale to patients by assigning them the highest applicable score on specific days post-PICU admission. 7. Death. 6. Extracorporeal life support. 5. Supported by life-sustaining therapies, including continuous renal replacement therapy, vasoactives, or invasive ventilation. 4. Hospitalized with or 3 without organ dysfunction. 2. Discharged with or 1 without new morbidity. We analyzed Spearman rank order correlations and 95% confidence interval between proximal outcomes. This included pediatric critical care desirability of outcome ranking scale on days 7, 14, and 21, ventilator-free days, cumulative 28-day pediatric logistic organ dysfunction 2 or PLOD 2 scores, and PICU-free days, and 3-month decrease in health-related quality of life or death. Health-related quality of life was measured by Pediatric Quality of Life Inventory 4.0 or Functional Status 2R for patients with developmental delay. Patients who died were assigned the worst possible health-related quality of life score. Pediatric critical care desirability of outcome ranking scores were applied to 385 patients with a median age of 6 years and an interquartile range of 2 to 13 years, and 177 or 46% with a complex chronic condition. 3-month outcomes were available for 245 patients or 64%, and 42 patients or 17% died. Pediatric critical care desirability of outcome ranking scale on days 7, 14, and 21 demonstrated fair correlation with the primary outcome, similar to correlations for cumulative 28-day PLOD 2 scores, ventilator-free days, and PICU-free days. The pediatric critical care desirability of outcome ranking scale correlation on day 7 was negative 0.42 with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.52 to negative 0.31. The correlation on day 14 was negative 0.47 with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.56 to negative 0.36. And the correlation on day 21 was negative 0.52 with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.61 to negative 0.42. While the correlation for 28-day PLOD 2 score was negative 0.51 with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.59 to negative 0.41, the correlation for ventilator-free days was 0.43 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.32 to 0.53, and the correlation for PICU-free days was 0.46 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.35 to 0.55. In conclusion, the Pediatric Critical Care Desirability of Outcome Ranking Scale is a feasible, practical outcome for pediatric sepsis trials and demonstrates fair correlation with decrease in health-related quality of life or death at 3 months. Abstract 6 is a cardiac intensive care article by Wang et al. Nicardipine or nitroprusside for postoperative blood pressure control in infants after surgery for congenital heart disease, single-center retrospective non-inferiority and cost analysis from 2016 to 2020. Objectives: Postoperative hypertension frequently occurs after surgery for congenital heart disease. Given safety concerns when using calcium channel blockers in infants, along with the cost and side effect profile of nitroprusside, we retrospectively assessed our experience of using nicardipine and nitroprusside for postoperative blood pressure control in infants who underwent surgery for congenital heart disease. We also investigated the cost difference between the medications. Design. This study was a single-center retrospective pre-post chart review of patients who had surgery for congenital heart disease between 2016 and 2020. The primary aim was a non-inferiority comparison of achievement of blood pressure goal at 1 hour post-initiation of an antihypertensive agent. Secondary comparisons included achievement of blood pressure goal at 2 hours after medication initiation, vasoactive inotropic score, and blood transfusion, crystalloid volume, and calcium needs. Setting: academic quaternary care center. Patients included infants under 1 year old who required treatment for hypertension with nitroprusside with an N equal to 71 or nicardipine with an N equal to 52 within 24 hours of surgery for congenital heart disease. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We failed to identify any difference in proportion of patients that achieved blood pressure control at 1 hour after medication initiation, with 52% nitroprusside versus 54% nicardipine and a p-value equal to 0.86, with nicardipine non-inferior to nitroprusside within a 15% margin. Of patients who did not achieve control at 1 hour post-medication initiation, receiving nicardipine was associated with blood pressure control at 2 hours post-medication initiation, 79% versus 38%, and a p-value equal to 0.003. We also failed to identify an association between antihypertensive types and mean vasoactive inotropic scores, blood transfusion volumes, crystalloid volumes, and quantities of calcium administered. Index cost of using nitroprusside was 16 times higher than using nicardipine, primarily due to difference in wholesale cost. In conclusion, in our experience of achieving blood pressure control in infants after surgery for congenital heart disease from 2016 to 2020, antihypertensive treatment with nicardipine was non-inferior to nitroprusside. Furthermore, nicardipine use was significantly less expensive than nitroprusside. Our contemporary practice is therefore to use nicardipine in preference to nitroprusside. Abstract 7 is a cardiac intensive care article by Lubarsky et al. Association between neighborhood socioeconomic factors and length of stay after surgery for congenital heart disease. Objectives: neighborhood socioeconomic status as measured by area deprivation index is associated with a longer length of stay after surgery for hypoplastic left heart syndrome. We tested the hypothesis that length of stay is associated with area deprivation index in a large cohort of congenital heart disease surgical cases of varying severity and sought to determine which other components of the area deprivation index accounted for any associations. Design: retrospective analysis of a curated data set. The Brokamp Area Deprivation Index was determined using residential addresses. Overall, area deprivation index and each of its six individual components were dichotomized, and length of stay compared between groups above versus below the median for the entire cohort and after stratifying by Surgical Society of Thoracic Surgeons European Association for Cardiothoracic Surgery or STAT severity category. Setting: single-center academic pediatric teaching hospital. Patients included congenital heart disease patients who underwent surgical repair or palliation between September 2007 and August 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A total of 2,462 patients, including 52.7% male, were included. Median age was 254 days with an interquartile range of 95 to 1,628 days, and median length of stay in the hospital was 8 days with an interquartile range of 5 to 18 days. We failed to identify an association between Brokamp Area Deprivation Index above versus below the median for the entire cohort in length of stay, nor in STAT categories 1 to 4. However, in STAT category 5 with an N equal to 129, those with area deprivation index above the median or more deprived had a significantly longer length of stay, with a median of 48 days and an interquartile range of 20 to 88 days versus 36 days with an interquartile range of 18 to 49 days and a p-value equal to 0.034. Of the individual components of the area deprivation index, only percent below poverty level and percent vacant houses were associated with length of stay in STAT Category 5. In conclusion, length of stay after congenital heart disease is associated with Brokamp Area Deprivation Index in STAT Category 5 cases. We failed to identify an association in lower risk cardiac operations. Abstract 8 is a PCCM trial by Chung et al. Post-intensive care sequela in pediatrics, results of an early rehabilitation implementation study. Objectives: to compare post-PICU discharge functioning, health-related quality of life, and parental stress before and after the implementation of an early rehabilitation bundle. Design and setting: prospective cohort sub-study within an early rehabilitation implementation program conducted at the PICUs at McMaster Children's Hospital and London Health Sciences, London, Ontario, Canada. Interventions: a bundle consisting of 1. Analgesia and first sedation, 2. Delirium monitoring and prevention, and 3. Early mobilization. Patients with an anticipated 48-hour PICU length of stay were approached for consent to participate. Patients included critically ill children with an anticipated 48-hour PICU length of stay were approached for consent to participate. Measurements and main results: patient and proxy reported outcome measures were assessed at baseline, PICU discharge, and 1 and 3 months post-PICU discharge using 1. Pediatric Evaluation of Disability Inventory Computer Adaptive Test to assess physical, social, cognitive, and responsibility in caregiver domains of functioning, 2. KidScreen to assess health-related quality of life, and 3. The Pediatric Inventory for Parents to assess caregiver stress. A total of 117 participants were enrolled. Patient demographic characteristics were similar in the pre- and post-intervention groups. Following bundle implementation, 30 of 47 respondents, or 63.8%, experienced functional decline, and 18 of 45, or 40%, experienced low health-related quality of life at PICU discharge. 18 of 36, or 50%, at 1 month, and 14 of 38, or 36.8%, at 3 months, experienced either persistent functional decline and or low health-related quality of life, 2.8% and 2.6% at the 1 and 3 month follow-up respectively experienced both persistent functional decline and low health-related quality of life. There were no significant differences in the rates of persistent functional decline, low health-related quality of life, or caregiver stress scores post-bundle compared with pre-rehabilitation bundle implementation. There were no significant differences in the rates of persistent functional decline, low health-related quality of life, or caregiver stress scores post-bundle compared with pre-rehabilitation bundle implementation. In conclusion, we were unable to adequately determine the efficacy of a rehabilitation bundle on patient-centered outcomes as this sub-study was not powered for these outcomes. Our results did reveal that persistent low functioning is common in PICU survivors, more common than low health-related quality of life, while experiencing both functional decline and low health-related quality of life was uncommon. Abstract 9 is an online clinical investigation by Akandi Isil et al. Comparing the quality of domain-specific versus general language models for artificial intelligence-generated differential diagnoses in PICU patients. Objectives: generative language models are being evaluated in a variety of tasks in healthcare, but pediatric critical care studies are scant. Our objective was to evaluate the utility of generative language models in the pediatric critical care setting and to determine whether domain-adapted language models can outperform much larger general domain language models in generating a differential diagnosis from the admission notes of PICU patients. Design: single-center retrospective cohort study. Setting: quaternary 40-bed PICU. Patients: notes from all patients admitted to the PICU between January 2012 and April 2023 were used for model development. 130 randomly selected admission notes were used for evaluation. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: 5 experts in critical care used a 5-point Likert scale to independently evaluate the overall quality of differential diagnoses. 1. Written by the clinician in the original notes. 2. Generated by 2 generational language models, BioGPT Large and LLAMA 65B, and 3. Generated by 2 fine-tuned models, fine-tuned BioGPT Large and fine-tuned LLAMA 7B. Differences among differential diagnoses were compared using mixed methods regression models. We used 1,916,538 notes from 32,454 unique patients for model development and validation. The mean quality scores of the differential diagnoses generated by the clinicians and fine-tuned LLM-07B, the best performing language model, were 3.43 and 2.88 respectively, with an absolute difference of 0.54 units, a 95% confidence interval of 0.37 to 0.72, and a p-value less than 0.001. Fine-tuned LLM-07B performed better than LLM-65B with an absolute difference of 0.23 units, a 95% confidence interval of 0.06 to 0.41, and a p-value equal to 0.009. And BioGPT Large had an absolute difference of 0.86 units, a 95% confidence interval of 0.69 to 1, and a p-value less than 0.001. The differential diagnosis generated by clinicians and fine-tuned LLM-07B were ranked as the highest quality in 144 or 55% and 74 cases or 29% respectively. In conclusion, a smaller language model fine-tuned using notes of PICU patients outperformed much larger models trained on general domain data. Currently, language models remain inferior but may serve as an adjunct to human clinicians in real-world tasks using real-world data. Abstract 10 is an online clinical investigation by Murphy Salem et al. Outcomes for pediatric oncology and hematopoietic stem cell transplantation patients who undergo tracheostomy placement, a pediatric health information system database cohort study from 2009 to 2020. Objectives: to describe the epidemiology, surgical complications, and long-term outcomes after tracheostomy in pediatric oncology and/or hematopoietic stem cell transplantation patients in U.S. children's hospitals. Design: retrospective cohort from the Pediatric Health Information System, or FHIS, database, 2009 to 2020. Setting: the FHIS dataset incorporates data from 48 pediatric hospitals and the Children's Hospital Association. Patients included patients 0 to 21 years old with an oncologic diagnosis and/or underwent hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, received a tracheostomy, and were discharged from hospital between January 1, 2009 and December 31, 2020. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: there were 1,061 patients included in the dataset, and 217, or 20.5%, had undergone hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. The annual prevalence in tracheostomy usage did not change over the study period. The majority of patients, 62.2%, underwent tracheostomy early or less than 30 days in the admission, and those who underwent the procedure later or greater than 90 days had a significant increase in mortality, 52.6% versus 17.6%, with a p-value less than 0.001, and mechanical ventilation at discharge, 51.9% versus 24.5% with a p-value less than 0.001 compared with the early tracheostomy patients. Complications reported included tracheostomy site bleeding, less than 1%, and infection, 24%. The overall rate of mechanical ventilation at discharge was 32.6% and significantly associated with chronic lung and acute lung disease. The adjusted odds ratio for chronic lung disease was 1.54 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.03 to 2.32, and the adjusted odds ratio for acute lung disease was 2.18 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.19 to 3.98. The overall rate of mortality was 19.6% within the cohort and significantly associated with hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, diagnosis of sepsis, and requirement for renal replacement therapy. Odds ratio for hematopoietic stem cell transplantation was 5.45 with a 95% confidence interval of 3.88 to 7.7. Diagnosis of sepsis odds ratio was 2.09 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.28 to 3.41. And requirement for renal replacement therapy had an odds ratio of 2.76 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.58 to 4.83. Conclusions: this study demonstrated a static prevalence of tracheostomy placement in the cohort population relative to the increasing trends in other reported groups. Regardless of underlying diagnosis, the study patients incurred substantial morbidity and mortality. However, tracheostomy-specific complication rates were comparable with that of the general pediatric population and were not associated with increased odds of mortality within this population. Abstract 11 is an online cardiac intensive care article by Ulrich et al. Outcomes of prophylactic peritoneal dialysis catheter insertion in children undergoing cardiac surgery a systematic review and meta-analysis. Objectives. The objective of this prospective register of systematic reviews, registered systematic review, and meta-analysis was to determine whether prophylactic peritoneal dialysis catheter insertion at the time of pediatric cardiac surgery is associated with improved short-term outcomes. Data sources. Databases search of the Medline, Embase, CIN-AHL, and Cochrane Library completed in April 2021 and updated October 2023. Study selection. Two reviewers independently completed study selection, data extraction, and bias assessment. Inclusion criteria were randomized controlled trials and observational studies of children less than or equal to 18 years old undergoing cardiac surgery with cardiopulmonary bypass. We evaluated use of prophylactic peritoneal dialysis catheter versus not. Data extraction. The primary outcome was in-hospital mortality as well as secondary short-term outcomes. Pooled random effect meta-analysis odds ratios with 95% confidence intervals are reported. Data synthesis. 17 studies met inclusion criteria, including 4 randomized controlled trials. The non-peritoneal dialysis catheter group received supportive care that included diuretics and late placement of peritoneal dialysis catheters in the ICU. Most study populations included children younger than 1 year weighing less than 10 kilograms. Cardiac surgery was most commonly used for arterial switch operation. In-hospital mortality was reported in 13 studies. Pooled analysis showed no association between prophylactic peritoneal dialysis catheter placement and in-hospital mortality. There were mixed results for ICU length of stay and time to negative fluid balance, with some studies showing shortened duration associated with use of prophylactic peritoneal dialysis catheter insertion, and others showing no difference. Overall, the studies had high risk for bias, mainly due to sample size and lack of generalizability. Conclusions. In this meta-analysis, we have failed to demonstrate an association between prophylactic peritoneal dialysis catheter insertion in children and infants undergoing cardiac surgery and reduced in-hospital mortality. Other relevant short-term outcomes, including markers of fluid overload, require further study. Abstract 12 is an online PCCM commentary on education and training by Chlebowski et al. Cardiac Critical Care Fellowship Training in the United States and Canada. Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society endorsed subcompetencies to the 2022 Entrustable Professional Activities. Objectives. We aim to define and map subcompetencies required for pediatric cardiac critical care fellowship education and training under the auspices of the Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society. We used the 2022 frameworks for pediatric cardiac critical care fellowship learning objectives by Tabat et al. And for entrustable professional activities by Werho et al. And integrated new subcompetencies to the entrustable professional activities. This complementary update serves to provide a foundation for standardized trainee assessment tools for pediatric cardiac critical care. Design. A volunteer panel of 10 Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society members who are Fellowship Education Program Directors in Cardiac Critical Care used a modified Delphi method to develop the update and additions to the Entrustable Professional Activities-based curriculum. In this process, the experts rated information independently and repetitively after feedback before reaching consensus. The agreed new entrustable professional activities were later reviewed and unanimously accepted by all Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society program directors in pediatric cardiac critical care in the United States and Canada, and were endorsed by the Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society in 2023. Procedure and main results. The procedure for defining new subcompetencies to the established entrustable professional activities comprised 6 consecutive steps. 1. Literature search. 2. Selection of key subcompetencies and curricular components. 3. Written questionnaire. 4. Consensus meeting and critical evaluation. 5. Approval by curriculum developers. And 6. Pediatric Cardiac Intensive Care Society presentation and endorsement. Overall, 110 subcompetencies from 6 core competency domains were mapped to 9 entrustable professional activities, which defined levels of entrustment and examples of simple and complex cases. To facilitate clarity and develop a future assessment tool, 3 entrustable professional activities were subcategorized with subcompetencies mapped to the appropriate subcategory, the latter covering common procedures in the cardiac ICU. In conclusion, This represents the 2023 update to the Pediatric Cardiac Critical Care Fellowship Education and Training in Trustable Professional Activities, with the defining and mapping of 110 sub-competencies to the 9 established 2022 Entrustable Professional Activities. The goal of this update is to serve as the next step in the integration of Entrustable Professional Activities into a standardized competency-based assessment framework for trainees in pediatric cardiac critical care. The PCCM narrative this month is entitled Meaning by Shilpa Shah. Shortly after a child died, a rainbow appeared, and I hoped her family would believe the rainbow was for them. But it was also a colleague's birthday. Was the rainbow for him? Or was it for another child for whose room that day we spent hours in and saw the rainbow from his window? But many children die without rainbows, their souls no less worthy, their family's grief deserving of no less comfort, no less magic, no less divinity. And many birthdays pass without sunshine and rain, and we work long hours in the room of many children and never even look outside. Or, does sunlight passing through rain mean nothing except that sunlight passed through rain? Or maybe these are all the wrong questions, and it is in the making of meaning where the importance lies. I think I prefer this. This concludes the abstracts for the June 2024 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.